It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
ESNY. So you're back on the East Coast now, aren't you?
I am. I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right.
My fiance got a job with American Airlines as a flight attendant and is based out here in Charlotte. So we are here in Charlotte.
Nice. Charlotte's a college town, right?
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of, like, when we, the rare times that we do go downtown, we don't really know anybody here yet. So if you're listening to this and you live in Charlotte, please reach out to me. but we do see a lot of college kids around and everything. There's two different D1 universities. There's Queens University and then there's UNC Charlotte. Mm-hmm. High school baseball is really big here. I'm now a high school baseball coach, but like, yeah, it's crazy.
You're coaching high school baseball down there now?
That is what I am doing now. Yes.
Nice. And now are you just doing pitching coaching or are you like the head coach?
Yeah, I'm just the pitching coach. I'll work with the catchers too. But yeah, you know, I feel like I keep moving down. I was with the Nationals in pro ball. Then I was at a facility where I worked with pro athletes and college athletes and high school athletes. Then I went to a community college and now I'm at high school. Next thing you know, I'm going to be like a grade school, like PE teacher or something.
T-ball. Which I guess,
yeah, I'll be coaching T-ball. Maybe I'll do that for my kids or something. Who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, how's it going, folks? This is Bleacher Creatures episode 164, brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Warwick Gaming, Elite Sports NY, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. Max Greenfield is back. How's it going, Max? Good to have you here.
Thank you guys for having me. I was coming on.
Yeah, so we have Max on for one reason. The Yankees are having a bad year. We're going to talk about the future for the Yankees. Everyone is going, all is lost, all is lost. Max, you and I are probably all alone in the boat together of, I think we're okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Yankees are this is, as we said before we came on, it's definitely a failure of the season. Like there's no way to like spin this any other way. It's a failure of a year. Mm-hmm. And that reflects poorly on the whole organization. But ultimately, like if you had told me that next year this team wins 95 games and competes for a World Series, I'd say, yeah, I can see that. I believe it. Like for a couple of reasons. One, what we're going to spend most of the time talking about today is the farm system is really strong. It's probably in my opinion, it's probably the deepest farm in the league, but it lacks kind of that true top end talent that other systems have. Like the Orioles have a pretty deep system, but they also have the top end talent to go with it. The Yankees are filled with a lot of guys who are good, not great. And then the other reason is there is like $60 million coming off the books this year.
That much, really?
Yeah. So they have Donaldson's contract coming off. Yeah. Severino's contract coming off.
Mm-hmm.
Peralta, IKF.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then it all adds up. Yeah.
So then all of a sudden you start to look at it and you're like, oh, you know, it's actually like quite a bit of money is coming off the books. So there's, as bad as this year has been, there's a lot of actual reasons for to be somewhat optimistic for the future.
I'm going to come in with an immediate hot take. I'd be okay bringing back IKF on a 1-year deal.
Honestly, if they do or don't, it really doesn't affect me too much.
Like as a super utility guy, yeah, fine.
Yeah, I like it, again, if he's like, yeah, I'll take a 1-year $8 million contract. Okay. That's fine. Yeah. I think for me, like IKF is a maybe. Middleton's another guy. Like Middleton and Peralta, I'd see arguments for bringing back. The bullpen's super good. I know there's arguments like, oh, well, King and Clay blew it. Yeah, well, Clay is when you're Paul O'Neill talks about this, or sorry, maybe Jeff Nelson talks about it. I can't remember who it is.
Jeff Nelson's done a really good job in the Yes booth, by the way.
He makes this point, and I don't always agree with everything that he says, but he makes a point that I do agree with, is if you're a guy who throws a pitch that moves as much as Clay Holmes-Sinker does, if you don't yep. throw consistently, it's kind of tough to keep it. And that's true. Like, yeah. I know that there's, like, people are going to be like, how could you trust the bullpen? They blew it every time they actually get a lead recently. It's like, they don't, the high leverage guys don't pitch very much. It's tough for them to stay fresh. Like, it's a hard job.
But I just remembered, I think this was the 2007 or 2008 season. There was a good 1 to 2 week stretch in, I think, April, where Mariano Rivera just couldn't get anybody out. And that was because over the first half of the month, he just hadn't been used.
Yeah. And he talked about, and Aroldis Chapman talked about it too. It was yeah. just like, he just needed to be used. He's just like, at a certain point, like, I don't care if it's a save situation. If I haven't thrown in 4 days, I need to throw. Or else what you're seeing with Clay Holmes is what's going to happen. Like, there are certain guys who just need to throw.
Now you're a pitching coach. Like, a simple bullpen or throw day, it's not the same thing, right?
Not the same thing, no. Like, you can try and recreate it live on off days or, you know, before the game and stuff like that. But and in season, that, I mean, especially with the grind that they play, you know, like, having a guy throw a live BP in season is kind of pointless, right? Because if you need him, you know, the next day, it's like, okay, well, now he's only good for that day, right? So bullpens and, you know, side sessions and stuff is just not the same. They need to get out, and as David Cone likes to say, toe the slab.
Yeah.
Every now and again. And it's, yeah, I mean, ultimately, like, I think the Yankees free agent situation, it's really kind of like they need a rehaul of the position player core, which is why the farm system looks so good, is because the top end guys who are the closest are position players for the most part.
Now, that said, let's kick off with the guy who's making his major league debut tonight, Everson Pereira. He drew a walk in what I thought was a phenomenal at bat, worked the count full, had a really good take to make it, I think, 3-2. He also has an outfield assist already. Max, you said, I think you said on Twitter, you saw him as a center fielder primarily. He's playing left tonight. One thing I noticed in his game log is the Yankees have kind of given him equal time in all three spots. Do you still think center is the best place for him?
I only say that, I say that because Jason Dominguez, while immensely talented, I think most scouts and most people across baseball agree is probably not a center fielder. No. He's got the athleticism, but the arm maybe isn't there. His routes aren't like amazing enough. It's just like enough things have to go right for him to play center field. But Pereira, it's like, yeah, I can see it. Like, there's enough people who are kind of like, you could give him a shot there and it might work out. And so the only reason I say Pereira should play center field really is because Jason can't, like, not that he can't, but it's unlikely that he holds it long term, but Pereira might. And so you might as well just give him a shot now, because Bader's not going to be here next year. Like, let's all be honest. He's not getting re-signed, and nor really should he.
My nightmare is the Yankees kind of sort of overpay him, but also it's like a half overpay, half hometown discount, just because, like, the defense is that good, but, like, they're just going to deal with the injuries.
I want to say, like, Harrison Bader's an objectively good player because he's amazing in center field, but I cannot stand watching him hit. It drives me bonkers.
I know a guy who's an Orioles fan, and this was years ago, watching a game with him, he would be like, hey, I'll bet you $10 Adam Jones swings at the first pitch. Harrison Bader's the exact same way.
Yeah, it's just, he swings, like, it's funny, he just swings too much, like, and he puts the ball on the ground too much, and he swings in bad counts, and it's, like, today he popped out on a 2-0 pitch. I didn't really mind that too much. It's 2-0, take a big hack, like, that's the time to do damage, but it'll be, like 1-1, and he, previous two guys walked on, like, 9 pitches, and he's swinging, and it's like, why? Why are you doing that?
It's one thing if you're aggressive, and it's equally frustrating because like, I've interviewed Harrison. My little brother is friends with him. He's someone who's really takes his approach seriously. I mean, there was a whole article, I think, from Chris Kirschner in The Athletic about how he switched to using the axe handle bat just so he could get that better drive on the ball. But it's like we're just saying, the lack of patience, it's like, okay, so how is that even worth it?
Right. It's just a swing decision. So you evaluate offense in a couple of different ways. And I'm sure Alec can speak to this as well, is you evaluate based off swing decisions. So basically plate discipline and, you know, how hard you hit the ball. Right. And pretty much like if you do those two things well, and how hard you hit the ball directly correlates to bat speed. I'm sure Alec can speak to it, that he had hitting coaches who were like, yeah, bat speed is really important.
Yeah. I mean, like, so it's interesting because you look at some case studies that we've seen in the major leagues, and the one guy who stands out the most is a guy like Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
Who seems like he's actually decreased his bat speed to make more consistent contact, and his average exit velo and max exit velo is down, but he's getting better results. So there's always kind of like that give and take with it. But I agree with you, Max, in the sense that, like, yeah, when you're evaluating hitters, it's all about the swing decisions and how hard they're hitting it. And I think one thing that has raised a concern as I watch the Yankees, I saw it today. I saw it on Aaron Judge's last strikeout. Josiah Gray threw, I think it's Josiah Gray, right?
Yeah. Josiah Gray. That's my guy.
Threw a backup slider. And
it had no chance of being a strike.
No chance of being a strike. And Judge gave an emergency swing that was, you know, 2 hours too late. And I saw, I think Gleyber Torres do that in the last series.
He did do it in the Boston series.
It was like a high curveball, right?
He swung at a pitch where it was like, that had no chance of being a strike.
So I feel like those like swing decisions, as we're talking about, like it's a good glimpse into what I think is the state of mind of Yankee hitters. And that's just, it's all over the place.
It is. I kind of agree with you, when we can bring it back to Pereira swings a lot. He will swing a lot. It's his kind of his MO is, but the thing is, like, if you swing a lot, you have to hit the ball hard, because you can make up for maybe a little bit of a lack of contact or some bad swing decisions if you hit the piss out of the baseball, which Pereira does. He has a 114 114.6 max exit velo or something like that.
So he had a 476 foot tank the other day, if I'm not mistaken.
On that ball, like that's the exact ball. So like you look at that and you're like, okay, I can live with a little bit of swing and miss. I can live with some swing decisions if, like, you know, every four balls or so is like 110 plus. It's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, that's not Harrison Bader. That's not IKF. That's not Jose Trevino. That's not, you know, it is kind of DJ LeMahieu in a sense, but like not consistently. He doesn't have that kind of like exit velocity, that kind of power. But like, that's the issue with the Yankees, is they make poor swing decisions, but they don't have the power to make up for those poor swing decisions.
I'd argue Jose Trevino at least has some potential. I mean, granted, he's a little bit older right now and he's coming off a tear in his wrist. But just from his first full season with the Yankees, I feel that he's kind of got the same problem Josh Donaldson does, where he kind of gets a little too twitchy in his butt and his legs, and that affects his overall swing. But when that bat cleans the zone clean, it cleans the zone clean.
He can make some good contact. He swings a lot.
He swings a lot, and like
I
tell every Yankees fan who bitches about Jose Trevino, Kyle Higashioka, Ben Roethlisberger, I say, guys, it doesn't matter. They're just keeping Austin Wells' chair warm. Let's talk about Austin Wells, because Boone said today that they're keeping their eye on him. I personally don't think he's ready to be called up, even for a cup of coffee. But he is playing pretty well in Scranton. What's the state of Austin Wells, and is he going to stay a catcher?
So I'm kind of on the fence with you. We'll see how he does, like, this recent hot streak, if it's like just a hot streak for like a couple days, or if this is just, you know, him finally coming out, right?
Yeah.
The power is legit with the bat. He's a left-handed power bat, and he can hit the ball pretty hard.
That's a Yankee Stadium swing.
Yeah, it is a Yankee Stadium swing. And honestly, his bat-to-ball skills are pretty good. They're not, he runs fairly well for a catcher. He's 39 for 39 in stolen bases in his professional career. Pretty impressive.
It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting.
He doesn't run often, but, you know, he's a solid base runner. Wells' thing is, as you said, the question is, is he a catcher? So from most of what I've read and kind of the data that I've been told is that he's really gotten a lot better behind the dish framing, but the throwing is really rough. Like,
and that's the problem they've had. That's the problem they have with Trevino is that
they haven't had a good catch and throw catcher since Gary. Like they, and even then, if you go back before Gary, it wasn't like McCann was solid, Martin was solid, but they weren't like amazing. They really have never.
It was probably Girardi, if we're being honest.
You're probably right. It was the last one who was like a really good catch and throw guy was probably Girardi.
Yeah.
And like, again, Alec can speak to it, but like of the three facets of catching, catch and throw is probably the least important. Mm-hmm. And he's really good at, he's apparently really solid at receiving. If he's just slightly below average with blocking, then you kind of live with the running game. Because again, hitters, base runners steal off the pitcher. They don't steal off the catcher. Like if the pitcher, and this is a problem with the Yankees pitchers, and you know, I understand like it's different this year. Your entire careers, it's been one way. Guys didn't really run as much as they do this year, but they're pretty slow to the plate. Like, really slow to the plate. Like watching guys like Garrett Cole and you know, any reliever come out of the pen, and they're not quick to the plate at all.
No.
So they're not really given their, like, I know Higashioka isn't exactly like a stud back there with the arm and everything. And Wells certainly isn't either, but their pitchers aren't really giving them much of a chance. And so, you know, you kind of live with that. Like, all right, as long as the pitchers are fast to the plate, then Wells' arm is an issue. But since the Yankees pitchers aren't, you kind of have to consider it a little bit more. And so, I think he sticks a catcher, though. I think the framing and the blocking are good enough to make it work. But I also think it requires, you know, Matt Blake and Desi Dreschel to kind of work in the offseason with their pitchers on, hey, you guys need to be a lot faster to the plate. Because
how's his durability?
As far as I know, pretty solid for a catcher. He'll catch, you know, the minor league schedule now is quite nice, right? They play Tuesday through Sunday, and that's all. So as far as I've been told, he catches four games and then plays five games a week essentially. And so that's pretty good. Like,
I think
the hope for him is that he takes the bulk of the reps next year. And then Trevino's there to catch Cole and play against lefties essentially. I think if that happens, I think that's a huge win for the Yankees. And again, the Yankees don't need Everson Pereira and Austin Wells and Oswald Peraza to be like 130 WRC plus hitters and crazy good rookies and all that stuff. They really just need them to be average. Just average. Because with their pitching staff, if they hit enough home runs and those guys are just average, it's a good baseball team because you have Aaron Judge.
And
Gleyber Torres is a good player. Like,
well, you've been saying all year the Yankees have lots of decisions to make on Gleyber Torres in the very near future.
It really comes to a head with, you know, Oswald Peraza kind of being back up. This is his shot. Right.
Yes.
We've all kind of talked about how the Yankees have handled Peraza, and the way they've handled him have led a lot of people, including myself, to believe that the Yankees just don't really like Peraza that much. He's not what you would find in a typical Yankee prospect that they like. Right. Like exit velos aren't like amazing. He's not slugging out of this world.
I've been tracking him since at or about 2019, maybe even like a little bit pre-COVID, and everything I've read about him, even going back that far, was like the glove is fantastic, the bat, lots of maybe.
Yeah, there is a lots of maybe. Like best case scenario, he's Dansby Swanson. I think like that's okay. Best case scenario. I think their comps are pretty similar. Worst case scenario, he's a probably gold glover at any three of the infield spots you put him in, and he's maybe like a 90 to 95 WRC plus, still a solid player. Like that's it. That's the floor here. But ultimately I just don't think the Yankees like him very much, but I think he can be packaged in a trade for, you know, there are a few spots. So Miami needs a shortstop. Pittsburgh needs a shortstop. Milwaukee kind of needs a shortstop, but I don't think the Yankees line up really well for them. But Miami and Pittsburgh really line up. And I think there's options on both sides there where something could be worked out, where a deal could be made.
Yeah, plus Cashman's got the pre-existing relationship with Miami.
They've almost traded for Gleyber Torres 2 years in a row.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Gleyber lives in Miami during the offseason too.
I think he does. I mean, a lot of guys, and you know, it's fairly close to, you know, some guys, you know, spring training sites and everything, right? So it makes sense for them to live down there.
Yeah. I want to take some time to talk about a Yankees prospect who you are ahead of us on this one, because I hadn't even heard of him until he made the Baseball America list. I'm blanking on his name. It's the pitcher.
Chase Hampton.
That's the guy.
Yeah, Chase Hampton.
Yeah, you think he's a stud.
The stuff is amazing. I mean, just so Hampton kind of rose to power this year because he was in high A ball with I think it was Hudson Valley, and he was striking out like 40% of hitters, and crazy. Just, I mean, he was striking out 40% of hitters, walking like 5% of hitters. I believe he's actually pitching today. So let me, I want to check how well he's doing right now.
Yeah, and I'm pulling up his stats for the year.
I'm just gonna go check real quick to see how.
He had 139 strikeouts and 101 innings pitched.
Yep, he punches out the world.
Yeah. So, hey, Alec, surprise, surprise, Texas Tech University.
There we go.
College arms and international draft, man.
Yeah. So Hampton today, he finished 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. I think that's 2 scoreless outings in a row. So if you go by Pipeline's grades, and I kind of take Pipeline with a bit of a grain of salt, but we go by Pipeline's grades, they have 60 grade fastball, 55 grade curveball, 55 grade slider, 45 grade changeup, 50 grade control, and a 55 overall. I think that the fastball grade is pretty close. I'd probably give the curveball and slider and control maybe a 55 or a 60 grade for the slider and curveball and a 55 on control, and probably say he's like a 60 overall guy. His stuff is amazing. I mean, it's probably the best stuff in the Yankee system. He punches out the world, doesn't really walk too many guys. His issue right now is figuring out how to go deep into games. And that's that's a tough skill to learn.
That's a gradual skill throughout the minor leagues.
I mean, we're even seeing it. You see it with guys who come up, you know, right away, and you know, some big name pitching prospects. And even as guys get older, they have to learn how to navigate through a game. I think his last start wasn't great, but I think we've seen Gerrit Cole kind of learn how to get through a game a little bit more this year. And so Hampton's issue of he needs to learn how to get through a game is a pretty good issue to have for a double-A pitching prospect who's last I checked, just 20. Yeah, he's 22 years old. He just turned 22 years old.
If there's one thing we know about the state of Texas, is that they churn out arms at factory speed.
The state of Texas is really good at producing baseball players.
Pitchers in particular.
Yeah. He came from a good school. And you know, here's the thing is the Yankees took him in the 6th round. This wasn't like a guy where it's like, oh yeah, people were clamoring for this guy. This is kind of like a guy they took in the middle rounds, and he really developed into something, which is something the Yankees have done really, really well. They are really good with pitchers. I know people are like, well, then how come they haven't produced one in a while? Well, it's also because they traded them away last year and the year prior.
And then you see Cashman calling Brian Sabian like, hey, which guys can we get ready the fastest? Hugh Clayton Beater suddenly being a starter.
Right. Clayton Beater's a starter. Yeah. Drew Thorpe looks like, I mean, he's got 23, I believe it's like 23 strikeouts and 1 walk. And
His stats are, I was just looking at his, I mean, he's 12
crazy
in the minors right now with a 2.62 ERA, and he's got 159 strikeouts against 34 walks.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. In 123 innings. Like
he's not a top 100 prospect for some reason. I really don't understand. Like the thing for me was, so his velo's always been kind of weird. So he came out of Cal Poly and he was like 89 to 92. Always kind of like, ooh, right-handed arm, 89.
Cal Poly?
Yeah. Played under Larry Lee.
So he's smart too. All right.
Yeah, apparently he's a smart kid. I can say kid because I am older than him. He's 89 to 92. With the Yankees, he's been apparently up to like 92 to 94. If he can get comfortably to like 93 to 95 and maybe even top 96 to 97, there's no reason that he's not a front end starter for them in the near future. Mm-hmm. So His slider needed some work too. They kind of, you know, like he added some depth to it his last year of college. He's kind of even continued to refine it a little bit. But those two guys, if you hit on one of them, things are looking really good for your staff in the long run. If you hit on both of them, the Yankees are in phenomenal shape in their pitching department. I really like, I'm still high on Randy Vasquez. Like, I really like Randy Vasquez. So by Stuff Plus, because once they hit the major leagues, we have Stuff Plus. And if you're listening, you don't know what Stuff Plus is. It comes from Eno Saris, who is a writer from The Athletic.
Yep.
And he basically created a pitching stat that's basically, they analyze each pitch and they tell you hypothetically how good that pitch is. So 100 is average. By Stuff Plus, I believe Randy Vasquez, he throws 5 pitches. 4 of them are at 100 or higher. So he throws like a fastball at 106 Stuff Plus, a sinker at 108, a cutter at like 112, and a slider at 131. And then a changeup, which Eno Saris admits that Stuff Plus is not very good on, that he hasn't really figured out how to make sure it accurately grades it. For example, it gives Tommy Canley's changeup a 100, which would mean it's an average changeup. And we all know that that's not true. And he gave that pitch like an 85. So he really flashes 5 above average pitches.
I jinxed it. I was about to say, as Tommy Canley induces a pop out on a changeup, and then it fell in and foul territory.
Darn.
So we said Chase Hampton, Drew Thorpe, and who was the other guy you mentioned?
Randy Vasquez. He's
Randy
he's
Vasquez.
Made, yeah. So he's yeah, made some
yeah, no, appearances. No, no, no. It was down in the minors. Minor league.
Another arm down.
Clayton Beater. Yeah, Clayton Beater.
Clayton Beater.
Yeah, who he also pitched tonight and had typical outing, lots of strikeouts, but also lots of walks.
Yeah, he's a reliever more than likely, I think.
Agreed.
I think the Yankees are right to continue to try and make it work as a starter. But here's the thing is he's trying to start in AAA. And if you're listening to this and you have not looked up the International League and then I can't remember the West Coast one. The Pacific Coast League. You should look at the run scoring environment because an average ERA there is like 5.2.
I'm sorry. Have you seen the Texas League in Double A?
The offensive environments for some of the minor league conferences leagues, like they're crazy. So yeah. It's kind of like we saw like with Will Warren, right? He hasn't really been the guy like people were hoping he would be this year. But it's also like, man, in AAA, it's brutal. Like it's if you have a sub 4.5 ERA, you're doing things right in AAA, which is kind of why I'm on this train of like, if you're like for Drew Thorpe and Chase Hampton, if they figure it out, they should just skip the AAA. There's no reason for them to go because it's either going to affect their stuff because the balls just move differently down there, or it's going to ruin their confidence. Like a large part of this is just you need to have confidence to get guys out and stuff. And if you're going there and getting shelled all the time, like, man, that could really ruin things for you.
Well, theoretically speaking, let's look forward because the rotation next year, Colin Rodon at the top, 1-2, Clark Schmidt sticking around because he's really adjusted and looks great in the second half.
Yeah.
Then probably
Nestor will probably be
Nestor's back. Yeah, Nestor's probably going to be back too. And then the 5 spot, it's a toss up between, I'd say, any of the guys we just talked about.
Correct. So here's my kind of like hot take. He hasn't thrown a pitch for the Yankees this year, which is why I would do this. If Frankie Montas were willing to take like a sub $5 million deal, I'd sign him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the worst that happens? Okay, I wasted $4 million on Frankie Montas, who at one point in time was one of the best pitchers in baseball in the hopes that, you know, he would recover off his injury and be good.
And then worst case scenario, he's a mop-up guy out of the pen.
Correct. And then I have 4 guys who can start in his spot. I feel like that's worth a conversation. I know people will be like, really? He like sucked for the Yankees. Who cares? Like he's basically going to be
Frankie freaking Montas.
Listen, I know that trade hasn't worked out as with many trades they have made recently. And that's a conversation for another day, but
yeah,
they traded for a guy who at the time was basically a top 10 pitcher in the league.
Yeah.
It was worth it. Like I understand people like, well, you knew about the health risks. Yeah, but they needed to take that chance because that rotation was fumbling on them in front of their eyes.
What I've been saying all year is like every single one of Cashin's mistakes that or one of the things that's turned out to be a Cashin mistake in the last couple of years, go back to when the deal actually happened and tell me it wasn't a good decision.
Yeah, you could see the logic behind it.
Pretty much, right? Like the worst deal he made was the Donaldson deal. I think we can all agree to that, that was in theory the worst one. But even then, even then, in theory, Josh Donaldson was supposed to be the best player on that deal. He was supposed to be like, and he was supposed to be an upgrade. Again, the year prior, he had a 20% strikeout rate with a 10% walk rate. Really good. He was pulling the ball the highest he had been. He had hit more fly balls than he had ever hit in the past few years. For all intents and purposes, it looked like, yeah, he should absolutely mash in Yankee Stadium.
And like, CJ Abrams just mashed going around the foul pole.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. 345 feet.
He's been playing really well recently.
Yeah, the
Nationals are scrappy, man. They are.
Yeah, they're playing really well recently. He's not a shortstop, but like, that's fine.
He made a pretty good play in the field today, though.
Yeah, he's still not a shortstop.
Where do you put him?
In the second base. He's a second. All right.
Yeah, shortstop, second base, tomato, tomato.
That's how the Yankees feel, clearly.
Anyway.
Well, actually, let's not go off that point real quickly, because I noticed something when I was looking at least on the prospect page for the Yankees. Of the top 10 prospects they have in their system, you know, 60% of them are either outfielders or shortstops. So it makes you wonder what their plan is for the infield in the next, let's say, 5 years, because guys like that Lombard Jr. and then
Roderick Arias.
Yeah, Arias. Like, you know, they're not slated, according to this, till like 2027. But
and they got Sweeney, too.
And they got, Trey Sweeney. So
I'm convinced that Trey Sweeney is going to be traded at some point.
I'm kind of with you on that. I think the Yankees, so here's the thing. If the best player on the board is a shortstop, you can always move them, right? Yeah. Like, you can always find a different position. I
forget who it was. They said if you could play shortstop, you could play anywhere.
That's generally correct. Like,
yeah,
Oswald Peraza is going to be a really good third baseman if that's where he ends up, because he was a really good shortstop, which would, honestly, if that's how it works out, would be so funny. It would be so damn funny. Now, Volpe's been pretty good at shortstop, so I can't be mad that much, but it would be so funny if they continued to play the better defensive shortstop out of position. It's just like their MO.
Not like they already did that with A-Rod or anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, just play the best defensive shortstop at shortstop. But yeah, I think if you have the chance, so like when they drafted Sweeney, I remember the draft of Sweeney was kind of controversial because a lot of people hadn't really heard of him. But numbers guys really liked him because, again, high exit velocities, high contact rates. And they thought, you know, well, he's got some problem hitting velocity. That really, his velocity problem has not translated. It's not really that. It's just kind of a consistency issue. Like, he has like a good 2 weeks and then he has a bad 2 weeks and he can't really ever seem to put it all together. I think you're right that he's kind of generally just a trade piece. The numbers are still good. They're still fine. They're not like out of the world or anything like that. You know, he's fine, right? Arias has really kind of taken off this year. You know, one point in time, he was considered like one of the five best international prospects in his
switch hitter, right?
I believe so. Very fast. Good athlete, really good athlete. So, you know, but he's years away, right? By the time he's ready, good chance that one of the, you know, Peraza Torres combo is probably not on the team. And by then, most certainly DJ LeMahieu is not on the team, right?
Like, right. And the Yankees are about to be stuck with him because his 10-5 rate's kicking after the season.
Correct. So it's funny. LeMahieu, I'm conflicted a little bit on LeMahieu.
Oh, he's my wife's favorite, so you have no idea.
So the contract he got, I remember being like, ooh, I don't like that. Like, I don't like how long that is. But it's Hal, right? He's, you know, there are ways that you have to manipulate money to make Hal happy. Mm-hmm. And that was one of them. They were clearly extending out the deal just so that way they didn't take too big of an average annual value hit. And his AAV is fine. It's like it is what it is.
It's fine.
It's just fine. And his AAV for what he is also fine. But it's like, are you really hoping that in year three of the deal you're saying it's fine? Like, you were kind of hoping by like year five you were saying that, not year three. And so I think the Yankees, their hope was Oswaldo Cabrera could kind of fill that utility role that IKF has been and DJ LeMahieu has kind of been. And he's not. Like, I like Cabrera. I think his positional versatility is really strong. He's struggled in the outfield, but in the infield, he can play third, second, short, all at an above average clip. His lefty swing, I think he just makes bad swing decisions. Like if you throw him a high fastball, he's out. Like he just, I don't know what it is. He can't handle it.
Fastball and the low slider.
Yeah, like, it's he'll swing at it every time. Like
do you think that there's a path to redemption for him, a la someone like Didi Gregorius?
Yeah, he's still young. He's like 25. Yeah. Like he can still figure it out. Exactly. Yeah, like I know this year has been an absolute disaster for him at the plate. It's also like the Yankees never really gave him any extended run in AAA to kind of figure it out. And that hurts too. Like he's not getting everyday reps and everything like that.
I think that's been the greatest injustice the Yankees have done to their prospects in the last 5 years is the yo-yoing effect between, you know, the major league level and AAA, where you don't let these guys get into any kind of comfort and routine because, you know, like, I look at a guy like Esteban Florial, it's like, well, we know he can hit AAA, and you give him a 10-game run in the major leagues and he struggles and you send him right back down to a scenario where you know he's going to succeed in because he succeeded up to this point. So, like, you know, we saw it with, like, Clint Frazier. We saw it with some of these guys where we thought, hey, this is going to be the next group of young kids who are going to come up and keep the window open, and they never gave him a fair shot, which I'm afraid is what's going to happen with the next. Like, Cashman has not shown the capability of learning from certain mistakes, so I'm afraid that's something he's going to do with the next crop of young talent. We've already kind of seen it with Peraza, but as you said, like, it's evident that they don't really like Peraza, but they're doing a disservice to themselves then, because they're not showcasing, okay, what can this kid do so that he can become a more valuable trade piece moving forward.
Yeah, there's some arguments of, like, I think for me, the thing with Florial is I just never thought he was all that good. Like, he swings and misses so much.
He does.
And it's not the Pereira thing where it's like he's got generational power. Pereira has that generational power where you take that chance. Florial does not have that.
Yeah.
And he's got his swing and miss issues are way worse. Way worse. And it's still an issue. Like, his numbers are good at AAA, right? I'm not going to deny that he's not having a great year there, but it's still the same problems. Yeah. So why am I inclined to believe that anything's changed? It's just like, I understand that it was like, well, he's only, you know, he's only gotten a cup of coffee in the big leagues. Yeah. And that cup of coffee, it comes with really high swing strike rates, really high chase rates, and not great, you know, batted ball quality. And so it kind of just leads me to the same thinking, like, well, has he changed? And the answer is no. I do agree with the sentiment, like, that they need to figure it out with the prospects. Like, what's crazy is they didn't used to be like this. Like, the 2017 through 2019 teams were built on the idea that they called people up and gave them opportunities. Like, that was why those teams were good. And at some point along the line, they just kind of abandoned that. And I still don't know why. They opted for veterans over young guys. And it just never really made a lot of sense to me. Like, last year, after August, Oswald Peraza should have been up and playing shortstop every single day. He should have been the shortstop every single day. Now, I know that there were some discussions between the front office and the coaching staff, and that kind of led to the indecision on Peraza, that there were basically just people didn't agree on what to do, which is another problem. But yeah, you got to let these guys play. And then they did it with Volpe. And listen, I think Volpe's going to be good. Yeah. But it was kind of clear that he wasn't ready in the first couple months, right? Yeah. Like, it just, I know that people will cite the chicken parm thing as like, oh, he got dinner with chicken parm. You know, Austin Wells had chicken parm and, like, he fixed his swing. I kind of think that's, like, mostly bogus. Like, he kind of went on that hot streak and it was a lot of just like, he's still chasing a lot. He's not really hitting the ball all that much better. I think this is just kind of like some luck going his way. And then he struggled again. And then his most recent run, it's been a lot better. Not chasing as much, doing a lot better handling off-speed stuff. Because if you throw him a fastball, he'll crush it. He can handle a fastball. He hasn't figured out how to adjust to the slider, adjust to the curveball, adjust to the changeup.
That said, he is recognizing pitches coming out of the hand better.
Exactly, which is a good sign. It's like, okay, the contact quality against those pitches isn't quite there yet, but he's not chasing them as much as he used to. He's now starting to realize what those pitches are. That's a good sign, which means the contact quality will come eventually.
Yeah.
So that's good. But then again, it's like, I go back to, well, they gave Volpe run. And I understand that was partially not a baseball decision. The guy from New Jersey grew up playing shortstop. His favorite player is Derek Jeter. Come on. Like, yeah, we all know that that's a part of it. Like,
I could smell the NJ.com coming off you, Max.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, that's part of it, right? The local kid gets the shot.
Right.
Even if I believed Peraza was the better option from the get-go, I still kind of believe that. I certainly believe that he should be playing shortstop, but as I said, it's kind of their MO. But yeah, I'm concerned. It's good that Pereira's here. That's a good first sign. And if Wells comes up in September, that's another good sign that they're changing, right?
Yeah.
I think the reality is that Cashman survives this.
He just signed a new contract. They're not going to let him
correct. Go. He signed a new contract, and you know, we can talk about which mistakes he learns from and which mistakes he doesn't, but you don't survive this long as if you don't learn. He does learn. He does do a good job of adapting enough, whether it's to the extent that he should or shouldn't. That, again, I'm not here to discuss the full ins and outs of Cashman, but like, prospects wise is something that he needs to improve on. Like, they need to commit to playing these young guys.
Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There are still moves that they can make where playing the young guys might not matter. You know, if they signed Matt Chapman in the offseason, I can't really argue with that.
That's Alex's nightmare.
He's a great defender. And I think the Yankees, who are notoriously before this year, had been pretty good with hitters and like getting kind of an extra tick out of them. I still believe that they kind of could, but I'm a little less inclined because their hitting situation is up in the air at the moment.
His bat is not going to save this team. That's all I'm going to say on that.
No, it's not. No. I think there are other signings that they could make. I think, you know, listen, they're going to be in on Ohtani. They're not going to get Ohtani because Ohtani's going to the Dodgers. Like,
or the Padres.
No, he's going to the Dodgers. Like, it's like a 90% chance he's going to the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't he? He goes to the best ran team in the sport, the team that's always competing for a title, and he gets to live in the same house, make even more money, and still keep his kind of quiet life because the Dodgers, generally speaking, do a pretty good job of making sure their stars are protected.
I was out with the money. Yeah,
go ahead.
I was out with a Dodgers fan friend of mine last night, and he was lamenting at kind of how, even though the Dodgers are still going to make the playoffs again, how it seems like there's almost like a decline or transitionary period. And I said to him, you have to understand, Mike, even at their worst, the Dodgers have always had a great player development system, because didn't they, what was it, like four consecutive National League Rookies of the Year were the Dodgers in the 90s?
Yeah, they've been long. You know, they had some ownership change in there and where it was rough for a few years, but for basically 30-something years, they've been extremely well-ran.
Yeah.
And listen, before this year, the Yankees were the same way. I mean, the Yankees haven't always been the best ran team, and you know, in my opinion, but they've always been really well ran.
Yeah.
Until recently. And listen, so that's why the Yankees will make a run at Ohtani. They won't get him. He'll go to the Dodgers because they're the Dodgers. That's just how it is. They also cut like $70 million in payroll to make it happen.
Yeah.
So, and the Dodgers are, listen, they kind of do something that I think the Yankees need to, first of all, they play their prospects, right?
Yes.
They're really good about that. James Outman, obviously, Bobby Miller, the heath of pitching prospects that they've called up, you know, Miguel Vargas for a bit. I think they just announced Michael Bush is coming up too. That guy's been raking this year. Yeah. Like, they play their prospects. So that's one area to learn. Is that the other area to learn is that you don't have to do things. You don't have to sign players just to appease people. The Dodgers let Max Scherzer walk, let Corey Seager walk, let Trey Turner walk. And all of it has worked out so far for them. And that's pretty damn impressive. Because if you told me that a team let three guys, one of them is having probably the best offensive season from a shortstop since A-Rod, essentially. One of them was arguably the best shortstop in baseball entering the year, and the other was a Hall of Fame pitcher, and they let all of them walk, and they were still going to win their division with ease, then I would tell you that, goddamn, they must be doing something right. this somehow turned into a Dodger thing, but like, yeah, the Yankees can learn from that of like, hey man, you don't always have to bring guys back. You don't always have to re-sign guys. Like, think of all the guys that they like re-signed or brought back where it just didn't work out, but they did it because like they felt some sort of pressure.
So like that kind of, Josh has heard me say it a lot of times. You know, I feel like a lot that the front office and Cashman like to kind of gaslight the fan base.
Yeah.
And I feel like Cashman and company don't have their finger on the pulse of the fan base. Cause as you said, like, you know, Yankee fans are kind of similar to Dodger fans where they're very passionate, but a lot of them are very smart. They know what it kind of takes to be a successful team, not just in the immediate, but for the long run. So like Yankee fans wouldn't be so discouraged if certain guys walked because they would feel like there would be a game plan in place to replace those players. Same thing like with the kids being called up. It's like, as you said, Peraza should have been called up a month ago. Like these kids should be having opportunities a little bit sooner than maybe what they've gotten in the past, because we need to know what we have in the young crop. We need to know how these kids are going to play into the future of the Yankees. And we've watched mediocrity from this team, and let's be honest, for the last year and a half. And yeah, it's just like one of those things where going back and summing it all up, Cashman has lost the pulse of the fan base. And that kind of just ties into, as you were saying, like making moves where you feel obligated to make the moves. It's like, no, be honest with the fan base. The fan base is smarter than what you think. And they're willing to accept some of those risky moves rather than you trying to be like, oh no, we have a team that is good enough to win the World Series. We would have won it in 2017, if not for the Astros. It's like, come on, now you're just insulting our intelligence. And that's what pisses my dad off the most.
I think two things on this. One is, it's funny that you say the finger on the pulse thing, because Lindsay Adler wrote an article today and it got a lot of hoopla, but I thought it was
great article,
extremely well written, and kind of summed it all up, is that they kept making moves that they thought would appease the fans, that they thought would do so, right? People clamored for more contact, so they brought in guys who make more contact. They didn't bring in good contact hitters. They just brought in guys who make contact.
Right.
And it's kind of hilarious that this offense now is the most reliant it's ever been on home runs, because the guys who make contact aren't very good.
I had one problem with the article. She kind of like criticized the Stanton move, and I was like, oh, okay. But like, that wasn't them caving to the fans. That was literally Derek Jeter calling Cashman saying, he's not approving a trade anywhere else. Do you want him?
Essentially, like, right. So I don't think it was like criticizing the making the move. I think it's criticizing how it's played out. But I would also say, I think they expected to win a title by now.
Yes.
Like, I don't blame Stanton for turning into what he's turned into, because I think the Yankees expected to win by now. Yes, this was always part of the risk. However, I see people today saying, oh, I hated that they made that move. Why? They got the reigning National League MVP for nothing.
Yeah, we make the joke in the ESMI Slack chat that was very much a "but it's Zava" move. If you watch Ted Lasso,
yes, I have only seen like an episode or two, but I've heard that show is great. But yeah, it's like it's, you make that move because you should. And I saw somebody say, it was like, yeah, I would have killed Cashman if he said he didn't want to trade for Giancarlo Stanton because of Starlin Castro. Exactly.
Yeah.
You would want to strangle the man, because if he didn't do that, you'd be like, why are you passing up on, at the time, probably one of the five best players in baseball because you don't want to play
Max. Max, I'm gonna share this story with you, because I know you are engaged right now, and this happened to me at my bachelor party, and I hope this happens to you at your bachelor party, whenever that may be. I was in Montreal, Canada with like seven or eight of my guy friends in middle of December. It's snowing. It's like dead cold. And we keep getting notifications on our phone like, oh, the Yankees are about to trade Giancarlo Stanton for Starlin Castro. All around the table, like, there's no way, there's no way, there's no way. And then sure enough, it actually happened. So
you couldn't believe it happened.
Yeah.
Like, it was so like, there's no way someone would just give away the reigning MVP for essentially nothing.
A bag of balls.
Yeah, it was nothing. So I think the criticism on other moves was that, so with the Donaldson, is it was $50 million worth Josh Donaldson. No, you could have spent that money on Corey Seager, right? Like, you could have just given him that money. Or you could have given it to Carlos Correa for 1 year and then let him do whatever it is, right?
Let his leg do the thing.
Right? But so bringing it back to, like, you know, not reading the pulse of the fan base, I don't think it's Cashman. I think it's Hal. Cashman only does what Hal tells him to do, right? If Cashman disagrees with Hal, ultimately that doesn't matter. He has to do what his boss says. And so Hal kind of spoke to all about this offseason and drove me goddamn mad. It's like, we're not too reliant on analytics. We're not, you know, we're really balanced on scouting. I hate the phrase balance because it implies that if I have numbers that say this, I should have a scout that says something else to balance it out. That's not how it should work. It should work in the sense of my eyes see something that maybe the data doesn't see right now, but we can maybe find it in the data. Or the data says something that I don't see with my eyes, so let's go try and figure it out. Everything should lead to the same point.
Alec, what do you want to
say? Just based on that, I just want to say I did call the resurgence of Christian Yelich a year or two early, but I saw the numbers first. And I was like, he's trending in the right direction. If he keeps it up, he's going to make a bounce back. So, boom, balance. Hire me, Yankees.
But the point is, like, the Yankees lost that somehow. Yeah. Now, I've heard reports that there's some dysfunction in the front office, that some people don't feel like they're respected, and, you know, other opinions and everything like that. I can't speak to that. But when I hear Hal saying that there needs to be balance, I know that they're going about it the wrong way. There is never a time where you should ignore objective data. The prospects are proof of that. The prospects are objective data where it's like, hey, these guys are good.
Yeah.
Like, they should play.
Yeah, it's, and like, say what you want. That. Say what you want about Hal. Say what you want about Cashman, about any decision making. The prospects alone mean that someone on 161st Street and River Avenue, someone in that building is doing something right.
Right. There are people in their player development department who are doing things right, and the data supports it, but also the eye support it too, right? Like, you watch a guy like Jason Dominguez play and you're like, damn, that guy's really good. Like, pipeline rated that guy is like the 81st overall prospect. That's crazy. That's nuts. I just really do. Like, if you have him outside of your top 40, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, the guy's like, really, like, I can understand, like, there's still some swing and miss issues, though not as prevalent as they used to be. He had a great day today in his first AAA game. I think he went 3-for-5 with like a homer, a single, and a double.
Because we were just talking earlier, like, you know, credit all to Dominguez for the abysmal start to his season and what he's done in the past 2 months. I mean, like you said, strikeouts had cut down a bit, and he's still stealing bases. The power has kind of come back. I mean, I know people are so quick to write him off because of the whole hype that's surrounding him, but
ebbs and flows, man.
It's ebbs and flows.
Prospect life is tough.
Well, it's not even just his prospect. Like, I'm like, here in Philly, I have to listen to these idiots on the radio just, you know, denounce Trey Turner, and I sat there back in May being like, he's going to be fine. And look, he's one of their hottest hitters in baseball. Like, that baseball was hard, people.
It's a hard game. And, like, listen, we've seen it happen to the best where they just go through stretches where it's like, that's weird. Like, guys just struggle sometimes. And so I think that's good for prospects. I think this is my, like, weird hot take about prospect evaluation, is that it's good for prospects to struggle because you need to see how they respond.
Yep.
Yeah. You need to see, like, hey, yeah, he struggled for a while now, but he really came out of it a lot better. I think that's the case with Dominguez, is he's coming out of it. And this is probably the best version of Dominguez that we have seen.
Yeah,
in his time as a prospect.
And you were right. 3-for-5 with a double and 3 RBIs on a run scored today.
Okay. Did he hit a home run or no? I can't
remember. No home run.
That might have been the other night.
Jake Lamb hit a home run.
Still around.
Yeah. Sticking with the Yankees prospects, Spencer Jones is getting a lot of hype.
I like him.
Yeah, looking at his numbers, there's lots of strikeouts, but it's also his first full year of pro ball. Where do you think he's at in his development?
So I'm shocked he's not up at AA now.
Right.
Given the fact that they caught up Dominguez. So I think that happens at some point this year as he gets up there. So Jones is freakishly athletic.
Big guy too.
Freakishly athletic. A really, really, really good athlete. So essentially when he was drafted, everyone kind of said the same thing. It was like, oh, hey, lefty Aaron Judge. They were similar. the exit velos are similar. He can hit the ball 120 miles per hour. He's done it before. Yeah. He's way more athletic, much faster. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but probably a better defender. Like, he could play center field in the big leagues and be a plus center fielder. Swing and miss is a problem, as with most guys his size, right? Like, you just kind of understand that that's a thing. The other problem is that he's got a bit of a swing path issue. He hits too many ground balls. He hasn't fully tapped into his power yet to kind of get that ball instead of hitting a, 111 mile an hour ball right at the second baseman. That would be a home run if you had just elevated, right?
Yeah.
He's, he just needs to figure out that part of his game. In my opinion, he's probably the best prospect in terms of ceiling. It's him or Dominguez, but I love Jones because plate discipline's already somewhat there. He walks enough. It's only going to get better. And he's just so athletic. So like I said, with Dominguez, it's a matter of like, I just don't think the fit in center field is there. I think for Jones, it is. I think he's a center fielder. Like,
I mean, Vanderbilt too. And that place, speaks for itself.
He comes from a good program. What's funny about Jones is he was not brought there to be an outfielder. He was brought there to be a pitcher, but he had Tommy John. And so they kind of just said, hey man, like, it's not going to happen on the mound. So they put him in the outfield because he had a good arm, obviously. And he just raked his last 2 years there. And obviously he's now with the Yankees. I think there's a good chance Jones figures it out sometime. I think he's a good offseason candidate. Like a guy who goes in the offseason, goes to Driveline or something like that, some facility, and gets a lot better.
It sounds like he's also kind of like slowly becoming part of Judge's inner circle, because apparently I forget who reported it once spring training started. First thing he did was track down Judge and say, hey, like, we're about the same size. What's your training routine? What's your diet? How do you stay healthy? What's this? What's that? So it sounds like Judge is. Judge has to learn from him. I mean, Judge often has like his guys, if you will, come out and just hit with him in California in the offseason. Like, Tyler Wade goes there still. Joey Gallo was there last offseason, I think. So I don't know. Maybe Spencer Jones joins that club this winter.
Yeah, Jones is exciting for me because I see the ceiling and I see a guy who's a multi-time All-Star. We talked about like how the Yankees don't have that top-end guy. They don't have a guy where it's like, yeah, that's an MVP. Like, I don't even think Jason Dominguez is that, and I don't think Spencer Jones is that either. Like, they don't have a guy where I'm like, that guy's going to win MVPs and stuff. Now, again, I don't think anybody said that about Aaron Judge, and look at what he turned into, right? So it can I think the general consensus on Judge when he was a prospect was, yeah, he'll hit 240, 250, but hit a bunch of bombs, and that'll be that, right? But no, obviously, like, you never know, right, when guys take their, things seriously. And not to wrap it or back around to the Dodgers, I just apparently I'm a Dodger fan with how much I but they had like 8 guys go to Driveline this year, and Mookie Betts was one of them. Max Muncy was another guy, and they also dramatic improvements from it. If Spencer Jones goes and does that, he could turn into a guy who could turn into an MVP. If Jason Dominguez does that, he could turn into a guy that wins an MVP. Like, you just never know. Like, guys can take jumps out of nowhere. Volpe essentially was that, right? I mean, when he was drafted, that pick was heavily criticized.
Yeah, he was heavily criticized. Oh, great, he's a utility infielder.
Right. They were like, not a shortstop, can't man that position. And there's still some questions there. His arm strength is still not amazing. But his range is really good. He can go get a baseball anywhere on the field. He goes get some baseballs where I'm like, wow, I'm kind of surprised he got that ball. So he's got the range part down, and listen, arm strength is something that can be improved upon. You just never know. Like, I mean, how many people had heard of Chase Hampton coming into this year?
You had to remind me of his name tonight.
You really don't know when guys take leaps. Now, on the Yankee side of thing, you can always assume that some pitcher is going to make a leap for them just because they hired Sam Breen years ago. And since then they randomly pop up with pitching prospects. Like, guys will just be like, oh, that guy's good all of a sudden.
Now, who's he? Sam Breen?
He's the director of pitching. So he basically oversees all the minor league pitching and everything like that. Whatever they pay him is not enough because they're really good with pitching.
Was that because that was not, no, because Matt Blake came over from Cleveland.
So Breen was a Driveline guy. He used to be the director of pitching at Driveline. He got hired in 2019 before Blake was even hired. And then From my understanding, Breen, you know, they were looking at a pitching coach, and Breen recommended Blake, who had just become the director of pitching over in Cleveland, actually. In my conversation with Matt Blake, when I met with him, when he told me the story, was like, yeah, like I was like, why are they talking to me about their pitching coach position and everything like that? And he just said that ultimately that's what they decided to do. I don't think they regret that choice at all.
I love Matt Blake.
I think people were like, well, look at how bad Seve's been. And that's a conversation with another day. But like, ultimately, the Yankees pitching staff was even the reason that they were still relatively in contention till recently. Like,
yeah,
I know that it's kind of fallen off the wheels, but like Matt Blake has done an incredible job there. I mean, and so was Sam Breen. Yankees are really good with pitching. Their prospect, the farm is good. Baseball America rated it 11th overall. That's roughly right. I think they're in that 10 to 15 range. It's a good farm.
They're an upper tier system.
And one thing that needs to be considered also, because you've mentioned a couple of times, Max, how they don't have like the MVP candidate. This is a team that has been successful for a decade plus. So they're not getting the top slot, you know, draft picks that the Orioles are getting with, you know, Jackson.
Like until teams are allowed to trade draft picks, which they should be allowed to do, like that's not going to happen for the Yankees.
I agree with you. Like, I think teams should be allowed to trade draft picks. Yes. The Yankees, whenever people talk about it, it's like, well, look at how much better this Orioles system is than the Yankees. Think about all the guys they traded in 2021 and 2022. Think about how they don't draft all that high. Think about how much they have to do to get these, you know, how much work they have to do to get these guys into good prospects. And you start to realize, like, man, the Yankees are really good at player development. Really good at player development. But they just stopped.
Those players don't play for the Yankees.
Correct. They just stopped trusting it for some reason. That's what blows my mind. Like,
I'm always going to be bitter about Tyro Estrada, Josh. Don't look at me like that.
I actually am. I'm kind of outside of Tyro, like, they really haven't traded a guy who was like
Ezekiel Duran.
Duran. So here's the thing: what I say about Duran is like, he was nowhere near what he is now. Like, he added like 3 miles per hour on his average exit velocity. He started putting the ball, you know, less on the ground out of nowhere. Like, just props to Texas and to him for turning him into a really good hitter. But what he was with the Yankees is his likeliest outcome was not this. it was not turning into this player. So, you know, got to give him, you know, some props there in that regard. But yeah, Tyro kind of hurts a little bit, but also not, because like Labor's been there at second base for a while. And so it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, that he's good and then let him go. But also they do have Glaber there. So it's kind of okay. But like, again, generally speaking, like we talk about Cashman's mistakes and some faults and everything like that. If the Yankees let go of a player, it's rare, especially a prospect, that they turn into anything.
Yeah, my editor likes to say Brian Cashman has never lost a guy that he absolutely couldn't lose.
Correct. And that's, again, 25 years in the industry. That's impressive. Like, never losing a single guy where it's like, oh yeah, like that one hurts a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, no, like that's impressive. So it all comes back to, like, they just got to play them, right? Like, if you know, you know. Like, if you know that some guys aren't going to be, like, what you expect them to be, you have information that we don't have as a public, right? We can't make that assumption. But at this point in your season, like, you might as well just play them, right?
Yeah,
like,
see what you have.
They clearly don't believe in Peraza. Well, you might as well just play him, as he just grounded out to end the game. That's okay. They couldn't hit. As is the
ooh,
rest of them.
Ooh, that was a weird hop.
It's just play them, right? Like, there's no reason. And the farm system's good. Like, if you don't believe in Peraza, okay, well, you still got Pereira and Dominguez coming.
I was very Bells impressed as well. With Pereira tonight.
He just hit the crap out of that baseball.
That's what
he does. That's what he does. Like, he will hit the ball hard.
Defense to Peraza there, though. He hit that ball 107.
He did hit hard, but
he's got a very flat swing. He's
just hits the ball on the ground too much, right? Like, it's just a matter of, if you hit the ball hard, you try to hit it in the air. Like, ground balls are outs. And that's the problem with the Yankees' contact quality right now. I tweeted today, it's like, the Yankees, like, yes, the strikeouts have been climbing in recent weeks, but for the most part, that hasn't really been their problem, is the strikeouts. The problem is when they put the ball in play either a shallow pop up in the air or a ground ball.
Like, right. Over 50%... unless that ground ball is finding a hole, it's useless.
Right. And they're not. Yeah. They're not finding holes. And again, most often than not, they're in just in Major League Baseball in general, ground balls are still relatively outs. Like, I know the shift restrictions have changed that a little bit, but yeah, generally speaking, ground balls are outs. And so the Yankees have not done, they do and they don't do a good job of like getting guys to elevate and celebrate. Like, that's Atlanta's whole offensive philosophy, and it's amazing. They literally just tell their guys, like, hey, pull the ball in the air as much as possible. And they do, and they hit absolute nukes and score a lot of runs because of it.
Austin Riley, that's my guy.
Riley rakes, Acuna rakes, Olsen rakes. Eddie Rosario has come around. Lando Garcia has had
what a fun team, too.
They're really good. They got some flaws. Like, I think that's also what makes the Yankee season so frustrating is, in the American League, there really isn't a team that's running away with it. Like, I think the best team in the American League is probably Texas, but I'm not sold on that. Like,
no. The Astros are coming up on them pretty quickly, aren't they?
Well, they've got swept by the Mariners this weekend, though. So it's like, every team has flaws, right? So it was really easy to be like, this is the year that they could finally.
Alec, it's like you said last episode, except for the Dodgers or Baltimore, whoever, nobody's having a good year.
Yeah.
Nobody's having a good time this year.
The fans of every team except two teams in the MLB are having a good time.
Kind of like, look at Tampa. Like, they start off red hot, and now they've been playing like sub 500 baseball for a couple months now. And then their best player was also involved in something horrible. But so
did you hear they took down all of his posters at the Trop today?
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
No, it is not. I don't know why we're laughing about this. This is terrible.
It's awful. Yeah, it's just but like, again, as you said, two teams. It's the Dodgers and Atlanta. Like, if you're an Atlanta fan, if you're an Orioles fan, you were feeling really good until your owner spoke the other day. Now you're not feeling so good. I feel genuinely bad for them.
Wait, what happened?
So you didn't hear about this? Oh, so he basically admitted, like, unless they raise the unless they raise the ticket prices astronomically, they won't keep all of their core.
Oh, Jesus.
Imagine admitting to that before half of them are even up.
And like, he's not talking about $300 million contracts. He mentioned like $200 million and $150 million.
Like, he's like, yeah, that's not going to happen unless we raise prices.
Imagine how good the Orioles could be if John Angelos just stepped away, promoted Mike Elias to president of baseball ops, and let him choose a GM. Imagine how good Baltimore could be again.
If they just said, I'll sign whatever, if he just were like, I'll be the Dodgers. I won't go Steve Cohen level, but I'll be the Dodgers. Yeah, the Orioles would run baseball for years to come. Years to come. But instead, now it's like, all right, they got to win in the next 3 to 5 years or it's not going
to
happen.
They got to win in the next 3 to 5 years and they got to pay some pitchers good money.
Yeah. But they're not going to. They're not, like, let's be honest. I'm fine with Carlos Rodon being a Yankee because I love him as a pitcher. He was weird tonight, but like, that was a guy I wrote in pen was going to be a Baltimore Oriole. Like, I was so stunned that when it came down to his market, it ended up being kind of just the Yankees. That blew my mind because the Orioles just didn't want to pay him. And we're talking about prospects. Goddamn. Their best prospect in baseball was Gunnar Henderson entering the year. The second best was Jackson Holliday. And it's like, imagine having the two best prospects in baseball, and then your owner basically just told the fan base, like, yeah, but we're not going to keep him long-term.
Okay, anyway.
I'd be devastated.
I can't wait for Adley Rutschman's a Yankee, so.
Dude, I love Adley, so that's great.
Drop the mic, okay.
Josh and I have a buddy who's a Phillies fan. He's always quick to remind us that JT Realmuto is the best catcher in baseball. And I'm like, dude,
not for long. Not even now. I think I would probably. It's him or Will Smith. Like Adley or Will Smith. That's the only. I love Realmuto. I think he's probably like low key, kind of like on a Hall of Fame path, but like not anymore. Like he's not the best catcher in baseball anymore. Was for years though. Yes. Was for
he
years.
He still do it defensively, but that bat has.
It's slowed. It's what do you expect? He's like, what is he, 33 or something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
33,
Real quick, Max. I wanted to ask you this. I wanted to make sure to ask you this. We've talked about Clay Holmes earlier. I'm gonna put you on the spot right now. Next year, closer, is it Clay Holmes or are you gonna give it to your guy Johnny Loaisiga?
As much as I would like love the fame of Loaisiga, here's the thing. I think in terms of the way the Yankees operate, they trust Loaiza more than anybody else. I think that's pretty clear. Like if when he's healthy and they're in a pinch, that's the guy they're going to.
Yeah.
And I think for good reason, right? Like in my honest opinion, he's probably the best reliever that they have. And so do you want your best reliever to be your closer, or do you want your best reliever to be the guy where it's like, hey, we're in a tough spot? I think it's the guy you want to be in a tough spot.
Like, it's like the David Robertson conundrum.
Correct. So remember when that they had Chapman, Miller, and Betances? Mm-hmm. They kind of used Betances and Miller just like, hey, go get out of a situation, and then Chapman closes it out. They have the opportunity to do that with basically King, Loaiza, Canely, you name it, right? They produce relievers like it's nothing. So it's fine. Like they should keep Colmes in the closer role as long as they feel comfortable with that. I really have no issue with that. And so I would keep Loaiza in the hey, it's the sixth inning, go get us through the sixth with two guys out, with two guys on and one guy out. And then if you can finish the seventh too, that'd be great. Yeah. Like that's his role. And that should be his role. He also looked really good. He's looked really good since coming back from injury. He looks like his 2021 self. It's so funny, though, because he's getting all these swinging strikes and he's getting swings and misses, but he's not getting the punch outs. He had a punch out today, so that's a good sign. But I look, he'll throw 18 pitches in an outing and 16 of them are just sinkers inside where he's like, just hit it. I dare you. just try to hit it. And his sinker it's back to that 2021 form where it's not running. It's just heavy sink. Like if you hit the ball, you're jamming your thumbs. It's not hard hit at all. It's
Zach Britton special.
Yeah, that's where it's at. The curveball is back to that 2021 form too. It's got that sweep to it. He's basically throwing a sweeper at 86 to 88, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, he looks like his 2021 self. Here's what I would do if I were Brian Cashman, or if he gets let go, whoever runs the Yankees, whatever happens, I would go up to him and just be like, how do you feel about a 3-year, $11 to $12 million extension? I'd give him that because if he's healthy, he's worth way more than that, but he's not consistently healthy. So he would be more inclined to take a deal that maybe doesn't pay him a ton. And also you're not paying a reliever an ungodly amount of money and still feel good about things. Like again, they clearly love him. They would not use him the way that they do if they did not love him. They do. Right. And they should. He is talent-wise probably the best reliever they have. And it's him or King, in my honest opinion. I love Clay Holmes. I think he's really good. But it's him or King. And it's because of that ability to, for the most part, go into a situation, get out of it, and then be able to work beyond that, right? Because they were both starters at one point in time. Like they are starters turned relievers recently. I know
Holmes
that they
Holmes was a starter?
No, King.
Oh, Michael King. Yeah.
What's funny, here's the thing about I love about Clay Holmes is when he was with the Pirates, they all said the same thing. They go, that guy has the best stuff on our team. Why does he have such a high ERA? Why can't we figure it out? And you guys will remember this too. When they traded for him, boy, was that trade hated.
Unpopular.
Deeply unpopular trade. You go back on that Jeff Passan notification, you're going to find a lot of really cold takes about Clay Holmes. And again, I understand that recently, it hasn't been super sharp and everything like that. I get that. But also, he's been really good as a Yankee. Like, you cannot argue that he hasn't been, amazing as a Yankee. He's just been everything.
Yeah, he's been real. He's an all-star.
Yeah, and again, they traded a guy who I'm not even sure is in the league still. So
I don't even remember who they traded for him.
What's his name? Jung Ho Park or something like that?
Hoy Park.
Hoy Park, that's it.
Yeah.
There's a Jung Ho Park somewhere out there. I'm not trying to be offensive. But they traded Hoy Park, who was tearing it up at AAA, and everyone's like, why is he not getting the call? And then they traded him for Clay Holmes. Oh my god, people wanted to murder Cashman.
Just another day on Yankees Twitter, right?
Just another day. But that trade has worked out. I think the ultimate thing for me is the Yankees, when it comes to the bullpen, when those guys become free agents, if they didn't extend them, they should just let them walk unless they can bring them back for cheap, because they've proven the ability to develop relievers it's nothing. And that's part of why ultimately I come on the outlook that the Yankees are fine. is because of that ability to develop relievers. You always know they're going to have a solid bullpen because they're so good at it. That's such a as a manager, you know how nice it is to be like, yeah, my starter doesn't really have it, but I can go to my bullpen and I can bring out Ian Hamilton, Jonathan Loaisiga, Michael King, Tommy Canley, Wandy Peralta, Kenyon Middleton, Clay Holmes.
It's nice not having to agonize over the decision.
And it's like the worst guy in your bullpen is Albert Abreu, and he's fine. The worst pitcher in your bullpen is like an average pitcher.
Don't let him come in with runners on.
Just don't let him pitch with runners on. You can't do it. It's so funny. Like if there's nobody on base, dude's perfectly fine. As soon as somebody gets on base, he like crumbles. It's so funny. But that's a reason for optimism is that the Yankees are so good at developing relievers. Yeah. Another reason for optimism, the farm system that we just spent the past hour talking about, believe in this farm system.
Yeah.
If you take anything from what I've said away, it's like believe in this farm system. There's something brewing here that's really good, and they just need to let them play.
Max, let's close out with this. Aaron Boone, do you fire him?
So I think he gets canned, but I also want to say that I don't think he deserves it. He's fine. Like, he is not the reason that they are as bad as they are. Like, not even one of like the top five reasons that they are as bad as they are. But here I'll give you the arguments for both keeping him and letting him go. For letting him go, they make a lot of base running mistakes and fundamental mistakes that reflects on coaching staff, and that reflects on the manager, right? So if you believe that they need to tighten that up, and you know, maybe they've been a little lifeless recently, letting him go makes sense. And I can if that's the reasoning, I fully understand that. The reason for keeping him is he does go to bat for that team all the time.
Yes.
He is. Now, people will be like, oh, he's a delusional optimist. He has to be. This is such a negative game. Like, imagine you're a player and your coach goes out there and goes, yeah, we suck. I don't know what you want me to say. Like, these guys are terrible. There's no reason to believe in them. Why would you ever want to play for that guy?
Yeah, who is that? The old Cubs manager in the 80s who just pretty much cursed out the fans and the team in at a press conference.
I don't know who that is. My time, but like...
Lee Elia was his name. But yeah, it's like look that up. It's wild.
So he defends his guys no matter what. To fault maybe, but like you want to play for a guy like that. You want to play for a guy who goes out there every day, and you know what? He always has your back. Again,
like unless during exit interviews, because I assume Alan Cash conducted exit interviews with players at the end of every season.
They always do.
Unless during exit interviews, the players are overwhelmingly no, screw this guy, he's not it.
Yeah,
he has 1 year left on his contract. Let him be a lame duck.
Here's the other thing I want to point out is, I think Boone's a fine guy. He goes out there and faces the media every day and does a really good job of being honest and also defending his guys and kind of trying to, you know, blend that line because it gets tough. I know fans don't want to hear like the it's right in front of us and stuff like that, but he's got to say that stuff, right? Here's the other thing too is as a player, you just want to know that your manager believes in you. And from what I've gathered, the players love Boone.
Yeah,
they really like playing for him. And I know that he hasn't gotten tossed recently, but like that stuff fires them up. That stuff makes them feel good that he always goes out there and has his players' backs and stuff. And so that's the reason to keep him is that the players really like him and they want to play hard for them. The reason to let him go is that they're a little lifeless. Maybe a change in voice is good. And the fundamental mistakes have been piling up this year, and that reflects on him.
Well, whether it's Rachel Balcovic or you don't like him, Don Mattingly.
I would prefer to stay away from Mattingly. I think there are good candidates, though.
Mattingly,
managers just don't matter that much, too. So,
I mean, Mattingly, I just feel like this is 100% a hunch. I feel like he's kind of got that Joe Torre thing about him where, it's not a sexy hire on paper, but he just has what the team needs at that current moment to succeed.
So this is what I kind of say is like people, there are people who still clamor for Joe Girardi. Please let go.
No, never Girardi again. No.
Girardi was the right manager for the teams that he coached. Yep. He was the right manager. He was not the right manager for the team that was developing in front of him. He was not. Mm-hmm. They And here's the thing. I read a study the other day. And again, as a coach, like, I really take these things to heart. I'm always trying to figure out how to be the best coach I can be. And it basically said that, you know, when you respond negatively to a situation where a player makes a mistake, they are then in the immediate moment, if nobody picks them up essentially in the first 5 minutes, more likely to make a mistake in the immediate after set and then have long-term negative effects if nobody picks them up in the first 5 minutes.
Gary Sanchez.
Girardi was that, right? He was a, you know, old school, get in your face kind of guy with the players. And that worked when it was Derek Jeter, you know, Alex Rodriguez, Jorge Posada, Andy Pettit, right? That worked for them because they were old school. That's what they came up on. But, you know, that style of like yell a bunch and get in guys' faces, that's been out of coaching for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like a really long time.
Just watching Girardi manage the Phillies, you could tell
he's also proof that the game had passed him by.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I actually wrote this for ESNY, like right after he got fired. I said, hey, from a Yankees perspective, this was inevitable. And the thing I pointed to is like when you are pretty much getting screwed out of a game by Angel Hernandez, and your approach to him is to just kind of lounge your way, take your time out of the dugout to go argue with him and not even really argue with him because you're like, yeah, we're talking. Okay, bye. Walk back.
And here's the other thing that we have to remember about 2017 is he made arguably the most costly mistake I've ever seen outside of not bringing in Zach Britton, a manager, which, by the way, if you're thinking, well, maybe they'll hire Buck Showalter, please don't do that, is game two, ALDS.
Mm-hmm.
Gary pleads with Joe to challenge the Lonnie Chisenhall foul ball. You see Gary being like, I know he fouled it off. But because they didn't trust each other, he lets it go by. Four pitches later, it's a one-run game. If Joe had challenged that, Chisenhall was out, the Yankees win that series in four.
Yeah.
That affects you have no idea how that affects things going forward. I'm not saying that the Yankees somehow win the 2017 ALCS because of that, but that's an extra game, right? CC's not now. CC can go, you know, maybe game one, maybe CC can, you know, all of a sudden, and CC was still really good at that point in time.
Like the pitching calculus gets rearranged.
Correct. You know, you have CC, Tanaka, Sonny Gray, who is their fourth starter at that point?
Sevy,
that's right. Yeah. You have all four of those guys now a little bit more fresh, a little bit better. And maybe that's the difference. Remember, they lost a couple games in Houston real close.
Yeah, very, very close.
We all know what was happening back then. So if just a few things go differently from that decision, maybe things change. And so bringing Girardi back was just never really an option. He was not the right guy for that team. Maybe Boone has lost it, right? Maybe he's no longer the right guy for the team. I don't know that. I don't think anybody on the outside can really say that because we're not there every day. We don't know what the clubhouse dynamic is like. So if they do decide to move on from Boone, I'd love Balkovic to take the job. She's not going to. But like Shelley Duncan has been the AAA manager for a few years.
This is his first year.
His first year. He was the manager. He was the manager at he was a manager at one point in time for one of their affiliates.
Maybe
in single A.
Maybe.
But
yeah.
He's been with the organization for a while. Clearly doing a good enough job, right? There are other people to hire. You could give Matt Blake a promotion and that would be fine. I think there are options, right? If they do decide to move on from Boone, I think the immediate one that comes to mind is Joe Spott. Like,
yeah,
it's time for him to manage a baseball team.
Is he still in Houston?
Yes, he's still in Houston. I was genuinely shocked he did not get a manager job this past offseason. Like,
yeah,
there were so many available and all of them interviewed him. And for some reason, none of them hired him. Now, I know with the White Sox one, he basically pulled himself out of it, which was interesting. But
I mean, they fired Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn today. So
which long time coming for them.
In the group chat, I said, holy shit, they actually did it.
I agree. I was genuinely shocked that it actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if Boone lets go, I think the guy I would be on the lookout for is Joe Espada. I think that's
and I wouldn't hate that hire.
No, I think he's fine. Like, listen, he's learned under Girardi, he learned under AJ Hinch, and he's learned under Dusty Baker. Three managers with three very different styles, and that's good. Yeah. You kind of like you get that diversified background. Also, you know, it's a good hire because he comes from two organizations well, maybe not as data heavy as the Yankees should be, but like he comes from Houston, which is obviously a very data heavy organization, and Dusty, who is batting Jeremy Peña second for some weird reason, but like he again, you look at Espana's background and it's diversified and there's a lot of different options. Yeah. So ultimately, if they do decide to move on from Boone, if I were a betting man, that's who I would bet on to get the job. And I think he'd be worth it.
Real quick note on the Astros, just from the Abreu signing alone, I'm so worried they're about to become the Cowboys of baseball. Just like keep paying old dudes again and again and again.
The Abreus, it's still amazing. They won a World Series and they chose to keep their manager over the guy who built the team that won the World Series. And now I understand that like a lot of that work was done by Jeff Lunau, and that James Click, you know, but what he did was built that bullpen. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what Click did. And that bullpen gave up like one run the entire postseason.
Yeah.
And somehow the owner decided to stick with Dusty. And Dusty is a great dude. I'm not debating on how good of a person Dusty Baker is. He's a great baseball guy. But that blows my mind. And now Dana Brown's fine. He's nothing. It's early in his tenure. I got nothing against the guy. Early returns. Gave up kind of a lot at this trade deadline, but they're the Astros. They're pretty good. I mean, how many people had heard of Yiner Diaz before this year?
Exactly.
Not that many. So they're really good at what they do. Unfortunate to say. So it still blows my mind that they chose the manager over the GM, the guy who like I don't think anybody can debate the GM has way more impact than the manager
at this point. Yes.
Like, 40 years ago, no. Like, the manager had way more impact than the GM did like 40, 50 years
ago. It's kind of astounding how the power structure, like football, it's coach and quarterback. And baseball used to be owner and GM. Now it's kind of evolved to president of baseball ops and GM.
Yeah, it's a more spread out effort. In basketball, it's still just whoever the star is.
But yeah.
It's not as interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just, if you have LeBron James on your team, he is the most important person on your team.
Tell me you hate the Lakers without saying you hate the Lakers.
I'm a Kings fan, so like I feel like I'm obligated to hate the Lakers.
Yeah.
So, and if you're listening, it's like, how are you a Yankees fan and a Kings fan? My dad grew up in New York, went to college at Fordham.
Yeah.
Moved to Northern California. You know, the Knicks weren't very good when I was young, and so he became a Kings fan.
Yeah. Knicks.
Oh, the Knicks. I was watching that clip. I think it's that movie. What is it? Joy or something like that. Soul.
Yeah, Soul.
It's like I've been messing with this team for decades, and then a club, the Soul throws something at the person trying to dunk, and it's the Knicks lose a heartbreaker again, and it's like
that's
hurtful.
We watched that with our 2 year old the other day. My wife burst out laughing. I was like, okay, I'm gonna leave the room for a little bit and forget my team exists.
That was a low blow. This is coming from a Kings fan. Like the team that didn't make the playoffs for 16 years thought that was a low blow.
Yeah. Anyway, Max, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a great talk, as expected. And yes, the Yankees are going to be fine. This year just sucks. I really hope the prospects succeed because it's too exciting. The future looks too exciting for them not to.
The farm is good. Believe in this farm. Ryan Garcia, my co-host, you know, he says it all the time. Believe in this farm. And I think you should. I think this is a good farm.
Good dude, Ryan Garcia.
Very good dude.
Alec, you got anything to add?
No, I'm all set on my end.
All right. Are you set for Giants season yet?
Cautiously optimistic. Cautiously. I mean, the Eagles are still the best team in the division, but you didn't hear that, Kelsey, by the way.
There's reason to be optimistic for the Giants.
Yeah.
Though.
The big thing is Daniel Jones is going to have more opportunities to pass. What's he going to do with those opportunities? Can he go off of last year and keep the turnovers down? If so, it's going to be a good year.
All right. And my man, Lamar Jackson, getting his second MVP this year. Y'all know it. Ravens flock. Let's go. Max, real quick, what's the name of your podcast just so everyone can check it out?
It's Caught Looking, a baseball podcast with Max Greenfield and Ryan Garcia.
Yes, and if you love pitching, definitely please give it a listen. It is a phenomenal podcast. I almost never miss it. Anyway, Max, thanks again for coming on. We will talk soon, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Okay, take care, guys. See you next time.